Okay, so where we are is PDF page 90, which starts section two of the lecture topics. We're about 90, a little over 90 minutes in, so I'll try to finish up sections two and three in about 15-20 minutes. What we're going to come to in section two, cohort effects, is a lot of examples from lifespan psychology. So PDF page 90 is a page taken from an old SRCD monograph, Lifespan Psychology, talking about cohort effects. And what we're concerned about is the often reported decrement in adult intelligence. And we don't want it to decline over age, especially if you're over, well over 50 like I am. So frame A is the operative frame. And the setting is, think about you're in 1960. We could change the years, but, and you want to look at a lifespan development of, say, cognition, some cognitive variable. And if you try to do it quick and dirty, i.e., get all the data within a month or 6 months, what would you do? Well, you'd get your 10-year-olds from a 1950 cohort. You'd get your 20-year-olds from people born in 1940. You'd get your 30-year-olds from people born in 1930. You'd get your 40-year-olds from people born in 1920, and you'd get your 50-year-olds from people born in 1910, and try to construct a lifespan trajectory based on that. Problem is that people born in 1910 are quite different than people born in 1940 in terms of their nutrition, in terms of their economic outlook, perhaps all sorts of things. The way this example is cooked is that all cohorts are growing. There is no cognitive decline, but 1910 started has a much shallower trajectory than 1940. So if you grab those data points, which are indicated by the circles, you'll see this pattern where you peak at 30. Don't trust anyone over 30 to be able to add correctly, and they're going down. And you could see that that's happened with later cohorts also. So this is a caricature, but it shows you the cohort effects can matter. And that's the most cartoon thing. And you can see frames B and C just show you where you're getting your data from. 1950, you're getting your 10-year-olds. 1920, you're getting your 40-year-olds. And those are not equivalent samples, so you can't kludge together a longitudinal trajectory, a developmental trajectory from repeated cross sections because of cohort differences. The more general item that's discussed is there are three things floating around. There's your age, there's your birth cohort, and there's the time of measurement. And it's important that only two of those are independent. If you know your cohort, you know the time of measurement, you know the age. Any two give you the third, and lots of analyses to try to put in all three, of course, don't work out so well. So cohort effects are an interesting thing, but here's the classic old-fashioned longitudinal cartoon, PDF page 90. I think you can sort that one out. PDF page 91 just does some additional discussion. Okay, PDF page 91 just continues that example from Nesserode and Baltes, SRCD monograph, talking about how these constructed selection from cross sections can mislead. And then PDF page 92 gets you to what's called Shea's general developmental model. Werner Shea was kind of the progenitor of a lot of this lifespan psychology. Although he wasn't fond of me because he loved cross-legged correlation. That's reciprocal effects. We'll take it up as a special topic in week 10, but that's an aside. So let's take a look at, well, it's not really a model, but it is an interesting formulation of what's going on. So let's try to puzzle out the picture on PDF page 92, the left frame A. Easy one is what's called CS, cross-sectional. That is, you sit at 1980 and you measure infants, 20-year-olds who are the 1960 cohort, 40-year-olds who are the 1940 cohort, and so forth. That's what we looked at before. A true longitudinal study is horizontal in this formulation. You start at the year 2000, and you can measure people at birth. At 2020, you can measure them at age 20, 20, 40. That's what we've looked at a good deal. Then what they call time lag is getting 80-year-olds at different cohorts. It's not a very common design. And then frame B gets more interesting, where you're getting sequential cohorts, cross-sectional sequences. You take people that were age 0 in 2000 and 20, 40, 60, 80. If you're measuring in 2000, you've got a 1980 cohort, you get 20-year-olds, and you do that also for 1980. Sequential cohorts is a useful design, getting at some overlap. So cell entries refer to time of measurement. So you could sit at 2000 and get 60-year-olds born in 1940. That might be a design that you could use, and we'll look at more examples. So that's called a model. What it is a nice formulation of a tautology, age, cohort, time of measurement. Only two of those are independent. Many people forget that. So we won't. PDF page 92. And here is, so PDF page 93 introduces you to one of these cohort sequential designs. You can see that for the 1954 cohort, we have three observations, 70, 71, and 72. We'll get 18-year-olds. If we measure in 1972, we'll get 18-year-olds from the 1954 cohort. In 1972, we'll get 17-year-olds from the 55 cohort. We'll also get 16-year-olds from the 56 cohort, and 57 cohort will get 72, we'll get 15-year-olds. Yep, that makes sense. Now, what we want to look at is short time series on a bunch of people, and we did that week two or week three with the brain data, which was an even more complicated situation. So we have short time series on four different groups. The groups are the cohort, and then we could ask about males and female differences in each of the cohorts, and maybe pool over cohorts. So it's very much in our bailiwick, three observations per person, got lots of people within a group, and then four different groups that may differ, may not, in their development. That's the setup for this. This is trying to get at, so getting at the age range 13 through 18, some overlap by only doing 3 years of observation. So it's an accelerated longitudinal design. PDF page 94 just provides some discussion of this longitudinal sequence of cohorts, 54, 55, 56, 57, tested every year, 72 used. We had a lot of subjects, 18,000 subjects, suggesting that social cultural context is more influential than maturation and personality development. You can see here is the growth curves, they're 15, 16, 17, 13, 14, 15. We could easily model those, the cohorts, on independence and achievement. Achievement seems to be going down for the 58 cohort, which is 12, 13, and 14-year-olds. Oh, well. So you can see there's a collection of short time series on a bunch of different groups. Cohorts define the different groups. And so this is longitudinal cross-sectional designs, longitudinal cross-sectional designs. And this is the linked reading for from Robinson, Schmidt, and Teddy, Issues in the Use of Longitudinal and Cross-Sectional Designs, Handbook of Research Methods in Developmental Science, which is a nice thing. And this is where we took these examples, and they have some discussion. Contribution of time, developmental function, it's been perhaps the least understood, and like the cohort variables, tend to be treated as a confound rather than integral part of development. Underlying psychological process unfolds over time. And so that's what you should look at. Age, cohort, and time constitute a muddle. They are redundant quantities, cannot be independently varied to produce unique contributions to a dependent variable. That's what often be tried because they're redundant. We should look at development over time, that is, as people age, and recognize there are different cohorts. That's the right way to do the analysis, and you'll see a lot of this. So that's why I wanted to bring it up to your attention, just as a brief commentary on cohort designs. And some of you may have these. They could be in medicine also. Okay, the last topic in our tour collection of topics under observational data is part three of lecture, which we'll spend a few minutes on, and that goes under the heading of what does econometrics do with longitudinal data? And they call longitudinal data panel data of a certain form, where you have repeated observations on a number of firms, people, whatever. What they do is rather different than everything we've talked about. They treat longitudinal data as a series of repeated cross-sections. So for example, when we see the Grunfeld data, every year they can do a multiple regression predicting some economic activity or events, or spending, whatever, and they want to see if that's stable or consistent over time or how it might change the coefficients of those multiple regressions. They really don't ask questions about how do things develop over time? Do firms change in their spending over time? Does a firm change? They don't look at the trajectories. They look at repeated cross-sections. And that's typically the kind of research questions that are asked, for better or for worse. That leads to rather different kinds of analyses. The heroes in trying to do this are some fellows from France who wrote the PLM package, and especially the PLM vignette, which is linked under Section 3. They reformulated it as an HTML rather than a PDF document, so I had to change the link. So we're going to talk about that. They try to map what's done in econometrics into the kinds of things we've been doing with LMER or LME back when they did it. And it's a painful exercise, but it's a heroic one, because even the basic terminology like fixed and random effects is turned on its head. For economists, a fixed effects means a random intercept model. Just means all slopes are the same. So what we would call a random effect, they call a fixed effect. So you can see why we try not to tread too heavily into this, because we don't want to disrupt nascent understandings of the basic formulations that we care most about. But it's good to mention some of this. So PLM has lots of the analysis techniques that they do, and the PLM vignette tries to explain some of that. And I do some data analysis with the Grunfeld data, which is classic panel data. So panel data econometrics scenario, the PLM package, PDF page 97, taken from the former PDF version of the vignette, but it's the same. And section 7, LME versus PLM, is the classic or the heroic part of it. Increasingly, availability of data observed on cross-sections of units, like household, firms, countries, and over time has given rise to a number of estimation approaches. Double dimensionality, that is, your repeated cross-sections. You do analysis within each cross-section, and then you can ask about it over cross-sections. That's different than looking at individual trajectories than asking about it over units. Time is observational data from different observational units, long but common in other fields of statistics, where they are often termed longitudinal data, which is the way we think about it. And we think of the unit, and then we think of the repeated observations on the unit. They don't. So we have LME and LME4. That's one way of looking at it. And panel data from the econometrician's viewpoint. This is PLM. How do they match up? There isn't that much overlap. Asking very different questions. Random and fixed effects, estimation of static linear panel data models, variable coefficient models, the kinds of things they do just stem from a different approach to longitudinal data. And I don't want to mess up our understanding of longitudinal data because it can carry us far. But it's good to mention there are very different ways that are growing up of thinking about it under the name panel data. And so, section 7, PLM versus LME4. The models termed panel by econometricians have counterparts in the statistical literature, mixed models or hierarchical models or models of longitudinal data. That's what we've done. Although there are both differences in jargon and more substantive distinctions. And it makes it hard to do the overlap. Fundamental differences. Econometrics deals, so it's PDF page 99, it's section 7.1. Econometrics deals mostly non-experimental data, tend to be very simple, great attention is put on the issues. Longitudinal, on the contrary, longitudinal data models, LME4, are estimated by restricted maximum likelihood. They do different ways. And there's all sorts of differences. I try to go through that in 7.1, 7.2. You can see they're straining to keep the mixed model formulation. In the mixed model literature, fixed effects indicates a parameter that is some constant, while random effects or parameters are very randomly around zero according to joint multivariate normal distribution. And we've seen that, RANF and fixed. And that's our distinction. Econometric models has random intercepts as fixed. And so that kind of can drive you crazy. General expression of mixed model and layerware form, they try to stick to that and give you some equivalences. And then in the layerware notation and PDF page 101, the RE specification, which is one of their, is a model with only one random effects, the intercept, and we'll see that with the Grunfeld data. Variable coefficient models are different, and so there's a number of functions in PLM that I don't want to get into that capture a little bit of what we do in mixed models, but it's still not starting out with the idea, follow a unit over time and then ask about differences between units. But you can see they've tried very hard to work through this. So the Grunfeld data, just to spend a minute or two on it, because we're getting close to our 110 minutes, which should be our goal. We went a little bit over that last week, I know. We've got 10 observations over 20 years, so 200 observations, production units, country, the U.S., and we've got gross investment, and we've got two predictors, value of the firm and stock of plant and equipment, and this is phase data, this is data Grunfeld from the PLM package. So we have 20 years, 10 firms, and you could look at a trajectory of each firm, and I did this on an exam question once. 11 firms see Grunfeld in the AER package. So we have only 10 here. There's 11 firms altogether in the AER package, applied econometrics in R. Also has a Grunfeld data. Caught me thing. And so I tried to do some things with this. And this is our final slide. We take a look at the data. We can get the data. Take a look at it. Firm 1. We have firms 1 through 10. We could do an LM list on it by year. So in 19, for each of the years, this is, so what I do is follow, try to do some of the panel data stuff, not our stuff, where we'd look at a firm over time. Here we're doing repeated cross sections, run LM list on this regression, and see if the coefficients are relatively constant. You could try confidence intervals. You can take a look at different years, might have different coefficients, coefficient models. And then we try some of the random intercept models, random effects. I do PLM and REML just to show some of their techniques. There's more we could do with this, but just want to show you it's quite different, and it may be it, just doing the repeated cross sections, I think, is a good illustration. Trying to match these up, I think, will give you a head hurting and may well degrade your understanding of what we have been doing. So this is enough of a departure. I just want to show you it's there. They have some routines. They try to show you how this maps into random effects models. And I did do that at one point, run the LMER, I know. Here I did REML, the LME. Well, I did it just to match them. Random one for firm. So if you look at REML, that's in some sense one version of their kind of model, ran them one firm. This is old LME analysis. This is within firm analysis, looking over time, and you get quite, you can match up some of this with the REGLS and the REML. Showed you how to get random effects there. But we should stick to the things we know how to do. If you need to go through this, like you're working with someone who's used to these kind of models, here is your translation table of sorts, PLM section 7. It's good to see they're very different things. I could do more on this, but I really don't want to get us too off topic. Just to know it's quite different. I don't find these questions interesting, but it's good for you to know they exist. So we should call week 6 to a close, just about on time, a little over 110 minutes, 112 minutes, which is about what a class time would be. And we'll start totally fresh week 7 with survival analysis. Analysis duration, hazard functions, life tables, and that'll be what we focus on for the rest of the quarter. This far, we've looked at change in measured variables. That is the rate you're improving, the amount you improve. Now we'll go to how long it took you to an event, which may be mastery, so you can see how these come in. And we even have joint models where you look at survival time and measured improvement, such as in CD4 counts and survival and AIDS research. So there are joint models that pick up both sides of this, but we're switching to the other side, analysis durations, starting next week. Thank you very much. We are done.